You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramalides, joined as ever by a very tired Sid Lowe. Hello Sidney.
Hello Phil.
Hello mate. Shall we talk about Spanish football?
Shall we?
Yeah, I think it's best for everyone if we do. This is what happened on match day 28. There were loads of good storylines, weren't there Sid? Loads of good things for you to write about this week.
It didn't feel like it, but I mean, there were actually quite a lot of things that happened that were quite exciting, yeah.
It's true, there were, but you know, Sid as ever tries to pick out a storyline and he struggled a little bit this week, but you'll find out what he went for when you read him on the pages of The Guardian, no doubt. Friday night saw Celta Vigo pick up a much needed victory at home to Almeria. Almeria still winless after 27 rounds of fixtures. There were suggestions in the local press that Rafa Benitez could have been sacked if he'd lost this game, but he won it thanks to a terrific goal from Oscar Mingueza, 17 minutes from time. That was it. Finished Celta Vigo 1, Almeria 0. Big result for Celta. Then on Saturday, Real Sociedad warmed up for the second leg of their Champions League last 16 tie with PSG by losing 3-2 at Sevilla. Youssef En-Nesyri scoring twice for the Andalusians. Sergio Ramos scoring what proved to be the winner as well. I was in Vallecas, a very cold Vallecas for Rayo Vallecano against Cadiz. It was a special fixture. It's always a special fixture between these two sides. They have a unique bond in Spanish football. Honestly, I've never been to a game where you've seen supporters of one team wearing the shirt of the other team and the scarf of their own team and vice versa. Beautiful, beautiful atmosphere. Great bond between these two sets of supporters. Great relationship. Unfortunately, the two teams produced a bloody terrible game of football. It was really, really bad. Finished 1-1. Rayo took the lead 12 minutes from time, but they conceded in injury time for Cadiz to pick up a draw. The game was suspended for about 10 minutes because of hail. And it was
that was probably the best really, bit, wasn't it, of the game?
You know what? The atmosphere during that suspension was terrific. Like, everybody was just jumping up and down, singing, chanting. It was great. My son looked at me, sort of his little nose was absolutely red and freezing. And he goes, quite excitedly, "Daddy, this is the coldest I've ever been."
Oh, wow.
And it was, yeah. It was bloody freezing. But yeah, it was good atmosphere, if not a terrible game. There were really trying conditions and probably a terrible atmosphere, but a really good game at Getafe. Getafe 3, Las Palmas 3. Getafe were 3-1 up, but then Las Palmas scored twice to make it 3-3. They could have won the game as well. Lots of goals at the Coliseum. Sidney did not witness any of those goals because he was in Valencia to see Valencia 2, Real Madrid 2. You might have heard of what happened with the referee at the end. Vinicius Jr. scoring twice to cancel out the two goals scored by Hugo Duro and Yaremchuk to give Valencia a 2-0 lead. We'll talk about that in just a second. Then on Sunday, Villarreal continued their resurgence under Marcelino. They thrashed Granada by 5-1. Alexander Sorloth scoring a hat-trick for the Yellow Submarine. Atletico Madrid continued their sensational home form. They've got the best home record in the division. They beat Betis by 2-1. Mallorca had another terrific result against Girona. They'd beaten them in the Copa del Rey a few weeks ago, and they beat them in the league 1-0. Copete scoring the only goal of the game. Girona have now lost 3 of the last 4, and their hopes of winning the league title are ever fading, as are those of Barcelona, who couldn't make good on both Real Madrid and Girona dropping points above them. They could only manage a 0-0 draw at San Mamés against Athletic Club. Monday night footballers Osasuna against Alaves. Let's start off, Sydney, then, by talking about the game at Mestalla. It was a game, of course, that a lot had been talked about this pre-match because of Vinicius returning to the scene of... I was going to say where he was racially abused last season. It was one of, you know... It's not the only place where he's obscene things being shouted at him, but it was the most high profile of cases. And I think it's worth just putting that into context of, you know, what the atmosphere was like building up to this game, because we were really quite worried that it was going to be quite a horrible atmosphere and, you know, bad things were going to happen here.
Yeah, and I think both of the clubs were a little bit worried about it as well. Obviously, Valencia probably more worried about it than Real Madrid, in the sense that they probably felt like there was more damage that could be done to them than Real Madrid felt, that if their fans, or if any of their fans had racially abused Vinicius, then obviously the impact upon them would have been, quite apart from the shame, but also the kind of the practical impact, I think, would have been huge. They've been very conscious of trying to prevent that, but also being aware that there's actually not very much. They didn't think there was very much they could do. So they backed anti-discrimination campaigns. Of course, the focus was a lot about saying, you know, let's not allow it to go down that route. But of course, knowing that they weren't in a position to control absolutely everyone in the stadium, or didn't think they were. There was also that sense, I think, of from within Valencia, that sense that last year, obviously, they'd acted and banned the three fans that they had been able to identify. Now, clearly it was more than three, but they'd acted against them. And I think they were nervous about how it would happen. Security was put into place. Valencia, for example, came in on the on Avenida Suecia, which is the kind of, if you like, the main facade of the stadium. But Real Madrid came on the side, down in the side road, which was blocked off. So there weren't any fans there to try and avoid any confrontations or anything being said within that kind of mass of people outside the stadium when the players got off the bus. There's no way around it. Valencia's fans were on Vinicius's back all game long. It's very, very difficult to ever say anything categorically. But during the game, at least, it felt like that was lots of whistling. There were chants that Vinicius was stupid, but there wasn't racist abuse that I heard. But as I say, I'm very, very reluctant to speak for an entire stadium, because of course I'm not going to hear everyone. And there is a video that's come out that was handed to Gustavo Hoffman, who works for ESPN in Brazil, of a woman with a small child on her lap, and the small child is saying mono, monkey, at one point. Now, obviously, the video is short. We don't know 100% for sure who it was aimed at, but obviously we make the assumption it was aimed at Vinicius, and it's just kind of desperately, desperately sad, isn't it, when you see a child do that, because it says so much about, you know, kind of the roots of it, so much about parental attitudes, so much about the kind of the environment. That, as far as I know so far, is the only piece of racist abuse that has come to light anyway. And obviously one is more than enough.
Certainly is. And it's being investigated. It's a really quite saddening, very short video, but it is really quite disheartening. That's the context of the game. I want to now talk about the actual game itself, because it was, you know, a really quite exciting and thrilling game. And then we'll get to the end. So let's maybe do it in chronological order, because the game ended in possibly the most controversial fashion in recent memory in Spanish football. But before that controversial ending, there was really quite an exciting game. So would you go along with that, Sydney? Is that all right? Can we do it like that? Or?
Yeah. OK.
Yeah. OK. All right. So what about the game then itself, which saw Valencia go into this 2-0 lead and Real Madrid claw it back with two goals from Vinicius Junior? What did you make of the way that Valencia took the lead in that first half?
Well, it was the kind of game that a Real Madrid-Valencia game should be.
Yes.
And I realise that there's an overlap here, and there's an overlap that you need to be careful, I think, of kind of lauding a intense and slightly hostile atmosphere, but I think that's part of it. Mestalla was mm-hmm. was really on Real Madrid's backs. They always are. It's not just about Vinicius. So I remember the first game that Zidane played there, and it being extraordinary, that sense of, right, we've got to get at this team. This, you know, these are, if you like, the kind of the big guns, and we've got to go for them. They were very, very intense, Valencia. They've played a lot this season of not having a huge amount of the ball, but breaking very quickly. This time I thought it was slightly different. They did break quickly, and they do that very well, but I thought they pressed a little bit higher than normal. I thought they forced mistakes out of Real Madrid. Now, I use the word forced with a degree of concern, because the second goal that they score is a poor Dani Carvajal back pass. I'm not actually sure he's been particularly forced into that. But it is true that Valencia are on top of him. It is true that they're ready to make the most of it. It is true that they react really, really quickly when his back pass goes loose and Yaremchuk gets to it very, very fast and goes past Andre Lunin to score. The first goal, they find Vinicius deep into the corner and they kind of crowd him out and he loses the ball and they get the ball into the box and score. And I thought their first half performance was really quite good. They weren't loads of chances beyond the two that they scored, but I thought they were definitely the better team, and I thought Madrid were really quite poor actually.
Yeah,
and I think Madrid looked really.
They were, but they did.
But they did score. I mean, they were very, very poor, but they did score just before half time. They looked overrun to me, and they found a way to get that goal, which put them back in the game, and I think that changed the nature of the second half. And Madrid were, in terms of the weight of the game, in terms of the sense of a momentum building, I think Madrid. It felt like, right, okay, the comeback is going to happen now. It is going to happen now. That said, there were moments when it might not have done, because Valencia had a penalty given and then taken away, rightly, by the way. It's not a criticism at all. It's just telling you about the kind of the pattern of the game. A penalty given and then taken away. And two really good chances for Peter, who's on loan from Real Madrid, Castilla player, and he had two really, really good chances. A great save from Lunin on one of them and shot just over from the other. So even at 2-2, after Vinicius had scored the second, Valencia might have made it 3-2 before they were very nearly caught and lost 3-2.
And so to what happened right at the end of the game. This is what happened right at the end of the game. If you haven't seen it or you weren't fully aware of the sequence of events, the board goes up and 7 minutes of stoppage time are given. Right at the start of those 7 minutes, I think it's on 90 minutes and 20 seconds, a penalty is given. The referee then spends a couple of minutes, or at least it takes a couple of minutes for the penalty to be reviewed and then taken away. So 2 minutes are spent doing that. The referee says he's going to add an extra minute onto it. We get to the 98th minute, so a minute has been added on, and Real Madrid have a corner, which the referee allows to be taken, but says this is going to be it. It's the corner and nothing else. There's no second play. Segunda jugada, it's the corner and nothing else. The corner comes in from Luka Modric. It's cleared to the edge of the penalty area, and instead of blowing immediately, the referee waits a couple of seconds, and by the time he decides to blow the whistle, Brahim Diaz has got the ball back in, and we've got the ball back and has floated across in. The whistle goes. Now, whether it's just before the ball is crossed in or while the ball is midair, the whistle is definitely blown before Jude Bellingham heads it home. But Jude Bellingham heads it home for what would have been a 99th minute winner. That's the sequence of events. I mean, the referee makes a number of errors.
Yeah.
There are a number of errors here made by the referee. I mean, the errors, it's just human error. We're not, obviously, you and I do not buy into conspiracies that everybody's against Real Madrid, like a lot of people do here in Spain. And certainly that seems to be the editorial line of Real Madrid and Real Madrid TV. And after the game, Vinicius said, speaking to Real Madrid TV, not anybody else, but Real Madrid TV, they didn't let us win here. Alluding to some kind of shadowy conspiracy. We don't believe that's it, do we? But we do believe that the referee made some mistakes.
Right,
here.
Well, I mean, I think there's a handful of things to pick up on. And I'm going to try and make this as clear as I possibly can. Number one, the referee has given 7 minutes and an additional one. Now, we can argue about whether that additional one should be more than that, because as you've pointed out, it takes probably two minutes and 15 seconds, something like that, between Hugo Duro going down and the penalty finally being taken away. Now, I don't know, actually, I genuinely don't know the rules in terms of how much you have to add. Do you look at it and say, that's exactly what's being wasted, that's therefore exactly what I put on? And this is one of the weird things about this, of course. There's conceptual errors, I think, not with this refereeing performance, but generally. And one of them is that when time is added on, it's added on in 1 minute blocks. A referee never signals to the side and says, I'm going to put 30 seconds on. Or I'm going to put 2 minutes and 15 seconds on, or 1 minute and 22 seconds on. It's always, right, one more minute, or 2 more minutes, or 3 more minutes, which then may or may not be 1 more minute, or 2 more minutes, or 3 more minutes. Anyway, so you've got that starting point. You then get the corner, which is one on 98-13. Now, The referee, I should start by saying, by the way, I actually don't think there is an error. I don't think there is an error in not giving Real Madrid this goal. I think it's right that Real Madrid don't get this goal. Partly because the whistle has gone. What I think is...
Well, the whistle's gone. But the goal wasn't ruled out. That's the thing.
Exactly.
The game is ended.
Yeah.
The game is ended.
I mean,
we call it ruled out.
So
there was no goal scored.
No, exactly.
There wasn't a goal scored because the game was over.
It doesn't exist, exactly. But, I mean, we call it ruled out because that's shorthand and we all know that there sort of was a goal that wasn't given. But, yeah, exactly. I don't think there's a mistake necessarily in not giving Real Madrid the goal. In fact, I think it's the right decision. But I think it's so badly handled that it can be seen as a wrong decision. Now, here's the thing. You get that corner in 98 minutes and 14 seconds. You tell everyone that this is the last move. Now, here's the thing, and I've been saying this for ages. In fact, here's two things that I've been saying for ages. You know one of them already. One of them is there is no stadium clock after 90 minutes, which I think is absurd, and I actually think it's offensive. I think it's insulting. I think it says to fans, you do not have the right to know the most basic piece of information, which is how long has gone. How long there is in play.
Yeah.
Now, that maybe doesn't make any difference because the referee has also done this other thing, which is to go around and tell everyone this is the last play. So you don't need to know how long's left at this point. All you need to know is this is the last play. Now, I have a problem with referees telling players that it's the last play. Not because of this game, but in general. Why? Why are you telling them? What are you telling them for? Why are you telling them that this is the last play? I think it's out of order. And I think it's out of order because that's not your job. Because... on what grounds do they need to know this? You just blow up when it's finished. On what grounds do they need to know that this is the last chance? And one of the reasons why I say is because here's the hypothetical situation, which in this case is Madrid and Valencia, but it doesn't need to be. It can be anyone. If you go to everyone and say, this is the last play, to players who, by the way, can't see the clock in a stadium because there isn't one. Well, there is, but it's stopped at 90. So they don't know how long's left. What you are doing is you're giving the attacking team a big advantage because you are effectively saying to them, if you're saying this is the last play, listen, load the penalty area with all of your players. Send your goalie up. There's no comeback. There's no risk if your goalie goes up, as we saw in the Super Cup when Jan Oblak got outrun by Brahim Diaz, of the other team breaking away and scoring. It's fine. You can take this risk. Why should that team have that piece of information? Why should either team have that piece of information? Just blow the whistle when it ends. You don't need to tell them. Anyway, the fact is he has told them. Okay? So he's told them. So now you have a choice. You either wait for that corner to end, and how are we judging ending it? Well, it's no longer the corner. Or you wait for, if you like, the kind of the flow of the move to end. And I think there's a third place that you can end it. You don't take the corner at all. There are three moments, therefore, in my view, where that referee should blow the final whistle. He can blow it before the corner. No corner, end of the game, because the time is up. Even if it should be more, the time is up, according to what he said. Or you can blow it the second that Georgi Mamardashvili punches it to the edge of the area. Or if you're not going to do that, you wait till there's a kind of a dead moment, i.e. the ball is cleared up the pitch or it goes out of play or another cross comes in and the goalie catches it or possession changes hands or something that provides something of a watershed. And when the ball comes out the area, you can see him put his whistle in his mouth, thinking this might be the time to end it. And Hugo Duro is shouting at him saying, blow the whistle. Because it's over. That last play is over.
Yes.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm sitting pitch side at the other end of the stadium, admittedly, and I'm thinking, why hasn't he blown? He's just said last play. Why hasn't he blown when the ball has come to the edge of the area? He decides to let it go. Now, having decided to let it go, the ball goes wide to Brahim. Now, I think, to be fair to the referee, I'm going to defend him ever so slightly here. Brahim is surrounded by players and pushed wide, and it's not obvious that there's going to be a good cross delivered here. Right, so you could sort of say, well, it's ended there because he's kind of pushed into a corner a little bit. But I think if you're going to let it go that far, you've got to see this play out. Now, I was joking about this the other day with my mates from home. When we were kids, we used to play 60 seconds heads and volleys. And there would be so many arguments over same move. You get to 59 seconds. If the ball's still in the air, say, no, same move. And you'd be keeping the ball up for 20, 30, 40 seconds just to tee up the perfect volley and keep the poor bastard in goal. That's effectively what the referee did. But, of course, he then didn't, because when that cross comes in, he blows his whistle. That timing is awful. Now, he blows the whistle three times for the full time, which is what referees do. The first one, I think, is a fraction of a second before Brahim crosses it. A fraction of a second. The second one is with the ball in the air. And the third one, a bit more insistent, because I think he suddenly realised, oh shit, there's a chance here. I genuinely think he's blowing more insistently at that point, as if saying, no, no, stop. And he blows the third one and Madrid score. And I am absolutely 100%, I understand why Real Madrid are furious. If this had happened to my team, I would have been furious too. In fact, Hugo Duro said that post-game. I can understand why they're angry.
He did.
Because as Hugo Duro said quite clearly and quite rightly, I think, either you blow or you continue. And he managed to do neither of those things or the first option, which was don't give the corner. He had three chances to blow his whistle and he didn't take any of them.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between, offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Can I make a suggestion to you, Sid?
Yeah.
And I know you're not one for tinkering with the rules, but how would you feel about a stop clock for injury time? That literally gets rid of everything that you just said.
Yeah, I think...
I don't want it for the 90 minutes, but I just... This is what... I mean, you've been writing about this today. I had to find something to write about, and I started writing about this because I think that the end of a game, it can't be down to someone's judgment. It's so important. It's such a fundamental thing, such a fundamental factor in a football match when it ends. It can't be someone's opinion. It can't be up to someone's opinion. And if you have a stop clock counting down, everybody knows where we are. Everybody knows how long is left. You stop it if somebody's wasting time. You don't need to add on another minute. You don't need to add, you know, everything that you just said, the problems that we've just encountered, are gotten rid of if you do this.
Do you know what? I am generally speaking opposed to the idea of a stopping clock, but I had never contemplated. I mean, it's so simple, I can't believe I hadn't, but I'd never contemplated exactly what you've just proposed, which is a stopping clock, but only in additional time.
Only in injury time.
And I think it's perfectly rational. I also think it also adds another layer to this, which is potentially a good solution. I don't know if it's a solution, but it feels like a potentially good solution, which is the other thing. If you notice, the referee blows his whistle, he is not anticipating that cross coming in. He actually sort of looks the other way, almost embarrassed, I think, when it happens. But I also think there's something else, which is the referee. Here's a very simple thing which plays into what you're saying. The referee's got enough on his plate. Take the timing off him.
Yes, 100%.
Don't make him look at his watch when he's supposed to be looking at the game. Now, I can envisage a situation in which the clock stops literally as the ball's in the air. But I think you're right. If you're absolutely clear from the start, listen, that's a running clock. End of story.
Yes.
Unless the shot is in the air, like in basketball, unless the shot is in the air, it's done.
Even
if the cross comes in and someone scores an absolute worldie within like half a second of the clock, I don't see why not. I mean, I'm not normally in favour of that, but I don't see why
not.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
You're not. Good. Good. Okay. Listen, there's lots more that we could have discussed about this game. It was a really big performance from Vinicius, and it would be remiss of us not to mention at least what he did in the most hostile environment you can basically imagine any individual footballer playing in Spain. That's what Vinicius did on Saturday night, and he scored twice, and he was absolutely decisive for Real Madrid. So, you know, before we move on, Sid, a quick word on Vinicius and what he did on Saturday.
I liked Carlo Ancelotti's analysis of this, actually, because he said Vinicius was decisive inside, but actually didn't have, he didn't actually say didn't have his best game. He was very careful how he phrased it. He said wasn't so effective outside the area.
Yes,
and he said because Fulquier played really well. Fulquier. And I think he's right. Yeah. Fulquier did play very well. And Vinicius didn't have his greatest game, and obviously there were lots of confrontations, and there's the moment there's the moment of the celebrations in both goals, but again he's decisive, and I think, you know, we go back a little bit to what we were saying about him after the Girona game. He's brilliant. He's a properly brilliant footballer, and he actually wasn't on Saturday. But if you can get a guy who's not brilliant score twice, that'll do for me. Give me that kind of not brilliant every day.
If there's something that you want us to discuss that we haven't mentioned, send us a question and we'll answer it on our Q&A pod, which is out for patrons tomorrow. Become a patron at patreon.com/TSFP. You get loads of extra content every single week for around €4 a month. It's really, really good value. Speaking of good value, this is your last chance this week, dear listeners, to get your hands on our TSFP merchandise. We've got our World Cup 1994 inspired TSFP shirts available from gambea.com/TSFP. That's gambea.com/TSFP. You've also got TSFP socks available, but they're only available until Friday. It was only a 2-week run, and once they're gone, they're gone. Unless loads of you buy some, then we'll make some more. But essentially, this is it. This is your last chance. So thanks to everyone who's bought some so far. We really like them. We're really proud of them. And we'd like, you know, many people to get involved. So gambea.com/TSFP. Let's move on and discuss a really quite disappointing performance from Barcelona, Sid. Away at Athletic Club. Athletic, who had played on Thursday night in the Copa del Rey, made the final. They'd probably been out for some beers on Thursday night. They rested 7 players as well, or at least there were 7 changes from the side that started that Copa del Rey semi-final. Barcelona had seen Real Madrid drop points in controversial circumstances. This was a chance for Barca to get themselves back in the title race and move just 6 points behind Real Madrid. And it was a deeply underwhelming performance. The caveat being that they lost both Frankie de Jong and Pedri to rather disappointing looking injuries in the first half. Frankie de Jong going over on his ankle, Pedri pulling up with another muscular problem. And losing those two midfielders, I guess, disrupted the rhythm of Barcelona. But it really was a poor performance. And you can tell it was a poor performance, Sid, because afterwards, Xavi said it was a poor performance, which he doesn't often do.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he normally clings on to something that, you know, that gives at least a veneer of respectability in terms of how they played. He talks about them having the ball. He talks about a degree of dominance, even in games when they haven't really dominated in truth. And I think, and this time he didn't. I think he partly didn't because he was angry. Because he was angry at what he described as an opportunity lost. This was a chance, as you say, and they didn't really take it. They didn't really create sufficient chances. The best of them is what would have been a glorious goal, actually, from João Cancelo from the halfway line, sort of speared over the keeper. Unai Simón just about gets a hand on it, and then Yeray clears it off the line with an overhead kick. But apart from that, Barcelona did very, very little. I think they were actually, is it unfair to say this, but I'm going to say it. I think they're actually very fortunate. And they were very fortunate because of the context that you've been giving there. They were very fortunate to meet the best team at home this season with loads of changes off the back of that cup game, with Nico Williams suspended and with a degree of tiredness that I think meant that Barcelona probably were not as overrun as they might otherwise have been. And I think had they faced this Athletic team at a different point in the season. Now, I know
the week
you can't
before.
Say this. But yeah, exactly. I know you can't say this because, you know, lots of teams have got European games in midweek. Barcelona have that too. Lots of teams have injuries and Barcelona have that too. And so, you know, it falls when it falls. But I think in different scenario, they may well have been beaten. I thought Athletic created what little was created. I thought Athletic created more of it. Not loads, admittedly. And I was impressed with Athletic and their energy, considering all of those conditioning factors. And I thought Barcelona did very, very little. You're right, though. The absence of De Jong with what looks like a pretty nasty ankle turn and then Pedri putting up with an injury. You know, with Pedri, it's horrible to think of it like this, but he kind of hasn't been a very relevant player. He's been quite important, I suppose, when they won the league. He had that sort of 10-game run, but he hasn't been a consistently relevant player basically since the European Championships. And it's really sad.
How worried, are you, that we're going to be denied seeing him at his highest level because of injuries? Kind of like, I saw someone make the comparison on Twitter to Thiago Alcantara, and obviously he's a lot older and Pedri's a lot younger and he's got a chance to come back from this and get back to his best. But is there a chance, do you think, that, you know, this could be a constant problem?
Well, the thing that makes me, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I may have remembered this wrong, but I think Thiago had a couple of really bad knee injuries.
Right.
Whereas Pedri's a muscular.
Muscular, yeah.
And I don't know if that makes me feel more optimistic or less, because generally speaking, it's felt like players who've had muscular problems early in their careers have tended to find ways around them. Not always, but have tended to find ways around them. So the optimism would be there that carefully looked after. I mean, there's no doubt, by the way, that care has been taken subsequently, but possibly some sort of damage has been done early in his career. I mean, that calendar year when he played the Euros and the Olympics, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he played something like 80 games in that calendar year, 82, 83 games, something like that, which is too many. Now, obviously, I don't have, if you like, the medical knowledge or the fitness coach knowledge to know whether that has a permanent impact, whether it's a temporary thing. But yeah, I am concerned about him. And there is a bit of me that thinks we might not actually see this player. And I hadn't thought of it in terms of Thiago Alcantara. I thought of it more, to be honest, in terms of Ansu. But again, Ansu's different because although there's been muscular injury, it starts with a couple of knee problems.
Yeah, that's true. Let's see when Pedri manages to come back from this injury. Of course, Barcelona have Napoli in the Champions League in 8 days' time, a monumental match in terms of the rest of their season and their immediate future as well. So it looks like they're going to be without their three first-choice midfielders in De Jong, Pedri and Gavi. We're running out of time, but we should mention the fact that Girona's title push has gone off the boil. And once again, Mallorca were their undoing. Mallorca, who knocked them out of the Copa del Rey really quite convincingly a few weeks ago. Yeah. And once again, they've got the better of them this weekend. And yeah, the dream is over for Girona, if it was ever really on. And I think quite a lot of people allowed themselves to get carried away and think that maybe they could push for the title. They're not going to push for the title. They're 9 points clear of fifth, so they should be able to hold on to Champions League. But they have really gone off the boil in this calendar year, really. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, you're right. It's more than just these three defeats in four games, isn't it? I think that was always quite likely. I think we always felt it. But I think we didn't want to push this idea too hard because it felt like it was a sort of a bit of a disrespect. You just assume they're going to end up being rubbish. That's not really fair. But actually, in a way, I think it is the fairest thing because it doesn't load them with the responsibility of something that they shouldn't carry. Now, in terms of the way they were playing, they were the best team in Spain. There's no absolutely, I've got no doubt about that. They were the best team in Spain until Christmas, maybe even a little bit into January.
Yeah, because they beat Atletico Madrid 4-3 on the 3rd of January. They beat Sevilla 5-1 on the 21st of January as well.
Yeah, so you can take it to the start of February, more or less, can't you? And scoring lots of goals and creating lots of chances and really fun to watch and massively overachieving, we thought, which makes this natural. I guess the question mark now, as you say, it's 9 points clear of fifth. But of course, the run of three defeats in four suggests that 9 points could be lost. That 9-point lead could be lost. Now, I think they're good enough that it shouldn't be. I think they're good enough to be able to protect that 9-point lead. But I also think the teams around them are good enough to... Well, I say the teams around them. Obviously, this is really about Athletic, isn't it? Can Athletic and possibly Betis and maybe Real Sociedad, neither of whom completely convinced me, can they catch Girona or catch maybe Atletico? Because it could be that Girona finish ahead of Atletico still. That's still perfectly plausible, I suppose. Or maybe even that they finish ahead of Barcelona. I'm not ruling out the possibility of that. But yeah, it's gone. I suppose when you say the dream is over, if they were to get into the Champions League, it would still be a monumental achievement. And I suppose the possibility that they slip a little bit might be what helps to recalibrate, if you like, the achievement if they get into the Champions League. Like if they were to just drift to the Champions League a long way off top, but never really any risk of losing the Champions League place, it might just feel a bit like, meh, so what? If they get into a position where there's a risk of them losing the Champions League place, I wonder if that might actually help to underline just how much of an achievement it would be.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We'll see. 11 games to go in La Liga, and it's going to be exciting in terms of the top four battle. Probably less so in terms of the title, but there we go. And the relegation battle as well, because it looks like the bottom three are going down.
It does, doesn't
without,
it?
Without a whimper, really. But there we go. Listen, we're coming to the end of today's podcast. There is lots of football, though, in midweek. Tomorrow night, we've got Real Sociedad against PSG in the Champions League at the Real Arena. If they get an early goal, you never know. You never know. The comeback could be on. Big if, though. Then on Wednesday night, you've got Real Madrid against Leipzig. Real Madrid with a 1-0 lead from the first leg. And on Thursday night, we've got an attractive-looking fixture in the south of France at Marseille with Marcelino going back to his former employers as Villarreal take on Olympique du Marseille. So lots of football for us to discuss on our bonus podcast over at patreon.com/TSFP. We've also got the Q&A pod tomorrow. And buy some of our delicious-looking merchandise. It's not edible, but it looks very nice.
I was just about to say that.
Yeah.
Please only wear it.
Yes.
And definitely don't put ketchup on it. You'll ruin it. Although you might make it look a bit more like Luis Enrique's version of this shirt.
It's true. Gambea.com/TSFP. We'll see you next time, amigos. Thanks for listening. Adios.
Cheerio.